468 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an Aftershock Monday episode, and I don't have anything in particular I'm going to talk about, with maybe the exception of the art book that came out from Aftershock recently, the Jim Starlin book, which I read recently, looked through, which was absolutely amazing. I thought it was so, so well done. An art book in a way that, in my opinion, has never been done before. At least I've never seen one done like that before. The Art of Jim Starlin, A Life in Words and Pictures. So just depending on, you know, how I get rolling, I may talk in depth on that. But other than that, I just wanted to touch on some of the books that have come out recently that I haven't necessarily talked about. As this comes out, the most recent Wednesday we had was August 15th, which saw Baby Teeth number 12, which was the final volume of the second, or the final issue of the second volume of Baby Teeth. And I've really been trying to get Donny Cates on to talk about it, but he's been really busy and we just haven't been able to make the schedule work. So I actually was hoping to have him on for this episode today, but as I said, he's really busy. So hopefully we'll be able to have Donny on in the future. But Baby Teeth continues to be one of my favorite Aftershock titles. It's really, really good, and I do recommend it. We also had last Wednesday, the 15th, Lost City Explorers number 3, which I talked about to some extent in the New Comics Wednesday episode. Zach Kaplan, who, as listeners of the podcast will know, I'm a big fan of his. Absolutely incredible work. Very well done. I think that Zach is fulfilling his promise in that he talked about how much Lost City Explorers was influenced by movies like Goonies, kind of that 80s feel, adventure, these teens kind of in over their head. And it's been a really fun ride so far. So been really impressed with Lost City Explorers so far. So that's another book I recommend highly. And then the last book that came out last Wednesday was Volition number 1. And I hope that you all had a chance to listen to the in-depth interview I did with Ryan Parrott, the writer of Volition, because we really kind of dug deep into the nuts and bolts of what's that story's all about and a lot of the big ideas and themes that Ryan's thinking about. And we just had a blast doing that interview. In fact, I think we talked for quite a while after we stopped recording, and Ryan was saying how it really took quite a while for Volition to get together, you know, just to get everything put together and for it to finally see print. And he himself had forgotten some of the ideas and the themes that he was exploring, just because it had been so long since he had written the story. So it was a lot of fun for him and I to chat, and it kind of reminded him of what the story was all about. And so he had a great time with that interview as well. So if you haven't listened to it, I really encourage you to go back and listen to that interview all about Volition number 1, which, yeah, first issue, I was totally hooked. I think it's a great idea. A lot of wonderful themes to explore, and I can't wait to read more. This coming Wednesday, the 22nd, Aftershock only has one thing out on stands. It's Jimmy's Bastards Volume 2 trade paperback, which wraps up that story from Garth Ennis with art by Russ Braun. A lot of fun, a really cool series. It didn't necessarily go the way that I expected, and I'm not sure what Garth Ennis was trying to say. It's probably a story I need to go back and reread from beginning to end to get a better feel. It started out as one thing and ended up as something else, kind of. And I kind of missed that over-the-top, tongue-in-cheek super spy that we got from Jimmy Regent in kind of the first volume. He really kind of turned over a leaf in the second one and was much more relatable and kind of normal, I guess you'd say, or down-to-earth, emotional. I don't know. It was interesting. And it is an interesting story to think about. You know, I find myself wondering, well, if he had stayed that same tongue-in-cheek, over-the-top, chauvinistic, misogynistic character, then he wouldn't have had any growth. He wouldn't have had a story arc. Could that have worked? Then maybe I'm sitting here saying, well, you know, it's a boring story, or it's, you know, poorly done structurally because there's no growth from the main character. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about that. So if you haven't read it, I do recommend it. It is a lot of fun. The art by Russ Braun is sufficiently over the top the entire time, and it's a really fun story. And then next week I wanted to mention there's a couple titles coming out. There's Beyonders number one, which is from Paul Jenkins, which is I'm looking forward to. I talked to Paul about it at Ontario Comic Con not so long ago, and it's a lot to do with conspiracy. You know, there's crop circles and cryptography, and you know, there's all these conspiracy theories out there in the world, and what would you do if you found out that a lot of them were true, right? And it's about a young boy who finds out that situation, you know, that's actually how it is. A lot of these conspiracy theories that people are spouting that sound like nonsense are actually true. And he finds out that once he finds out they're true, I should say, it sends him on this massive treasure hunt, and he just tumbles down the rabbit hole, so to speak. So, as I said, Paul Jenkins, art's by Wesley St. Clair. Big fan of Paul Jenkins. I've loved the couple of series that he's done from Aftershock so far. In fact, Replica is my favorite Aftershock series of all time, and Alters was really good as well. So I can't wait to see what Paul and company have in store for us with Beyonders. So look for that next week, August 29th. We also have Brothers Dracul number 5. I think that's the last issue, and there may be 6 issues. That's by Cullen Bunn, telling the story of the Tepes brothers, you know, Vlad Tepes from the Legend of Dracula and vampires and such. That's been a really fun series, and the action's really been ramping up the last few issues. We've also got Infernal Descent, number 5, from Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler, that kind of an updated take on Dante's Inferno that's been very poignant with... That's been such an interesting series because it's so poignant and so emotional and yet so topical when they throw in all these pop culture references. So it's been kind of fun to see if you can figure out what's going on and what kind of modern day relationships and stuff they're trying to throw in, and just a commentary on life in general, much like the original Dante's Inferno is. Maybe the most literary work of, maybe I'll say unintended literary work of comics. I know several universities are using it in their graduate coursework to talk about Dante's Inferno. So that's pretty amazing when you think about it. We've also got Pestilence, Story of Satan, number 4, from Oleg Okunev and Frank Thierry. That series has been ramping up, and it's been man, Frank really cranked the dial up on Pestilence from the first volume. This one is more bloody, more violent, more over the top, but just as fun. And then finally, probably the book I'm looking forward to the most next week, Walk Through Hell number 4 from Garth Ennis. You know, the subtle horror take, he's really been slowly building the suspense. And I know there's just going to come a point where everything busts loose and we're just completely blown away. So also the artwork in that book by Goran Sudzuka has been nothing short of brilliant, kind of understated. And, you know, you'll turn a page and then all of a sudden you'll be confronted with these incredible images that are, you know, horrific and terrifying in their own right. But that you don't really see coming. And so I think A Walk Through Hell is going to be one of those horror titles that has legs and people are going to be talking about for a long time to come. So yeah, a lot of good Aftershock books coming out next week. As I mentioned, this week it's just the trade paperback, so not a lot to look for in comic shops this week, but certainly be ready next week when there's tons of good stuff out there on the stands. So let me go ahead and talk about the art book. As I mentioned, A Life in Words and Pictures, Jim Starlin. I've always been a big Jim Starlin fan ever since I can remember, probably ever since I first started picking up Dreadstar in the mid-80s and then read The Death of Captain Marvel graphic novel, which was absolutely amazing. And then, you know, you look back on this guy's career. He created Thanos, Infinity Gauntlet, which, you know, thanks to the Avengers Infinity War movie and the Marvel MCU, has become just a global sensation. But he hasn't had the best relationship with comics and comic publishers over the years. And, you know, they get a different idea about him. They think, oh, he's one of these artists who's just hard to work with, temperamental and that kind of stuff. And it's not that way at all. When you read this book, which is interesting because Starlin himself writes the book, you know, as the title suggests, it's a life in words and pictures. So there's plenty of gorgeous art to look at, but there's also a narrative. And it's Starlin picking out certain moments in time that still stand out to him and writing about those moments. And it's by no means a comprehensive history of his time in comics, but he hits the high points, you know. And he himself in the a bit of a foreword talks about how he certainly doesn't remember everything. He's not one for having a great memory. And there are a few facts he checked with old friends and everything. But it is an interesting read. And it's so much more personal and poignant because it is coming from him. And so you can kind of understand where he's coming from and these difficulties that he's had with publishers over the years. We're getting obviously just his side of the story. But I mean, he has no reason to lie about it. His words ring true to me in that he is trying to create the best work that he can, whether that's writing stories or illustrating them. And that doesn't always dovetail with the machine of comic book publishing. And that's only changed over time. You have to remember that Jim Shooter got his start in comics way back in the late 60s. So this guy's been doing it for a very, very long time. So he's been around to see Marvel and DC get swallowed up by giant corporations. He's been around to see comics move into mainstream pop culture and everything that goes along with that. He was one of the first creators to champion for greater creator rights and greater benefits and things like that. So he is, in my mind, a legend in the industry. His contribution to the profession of comic creator, I don't think can be overstated, just because, as I said, he was so instrumental in getting greater creator rights and greater benefits and art returned and just, you know, all kinds of stuff. He's been there. He's been around the block. He hasn't always been at the forefront of creating comics, and he'd be the first one to tell you that. In fact, he gives advice at the end of the book about people who are looking to break in. His biggest piece of advice is to diversify. Don't put all your eggs in one basket with Marvel or DC. He doesn't necessarily think that the comic profession is a way to have a lucrative career if you focus solely on that. You know, you need to have other endeavors. You need to have other creative avenues, because those two publishers can't be counted on to do what's in the best interest of any particular creator. The publishers are going to do what's in the best interest of the business of making money. That's why they are in business. You know, DC is owned by Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers is in the business of making money. Marvel's owned by Disney. Disney's in the business of making money. That's why those businesses exist. They've got shareholders to answer to, and it's all about the bottom line. And Starlin, maybe more than anyone, knows that. And so that's why he's giving the advice. And I don't even know if he necessarily needs to come right out and say it. As you read through the narrative, it's kind of there between the lines, right? But what I also found with going back and reading through his history was, I don't want to say missed opportunity or what might have been, because I don't think that Jim Starlin himself would have chosen to have it go any other way. But it's more thinking about from the perspective of a fan or the perspective of you know, a reader or a lover of whether it be his Captain Marvel series or his Adam Warlock series or what have you, is just wondering about what more he may have said at that particular time in his life. Because as he goes through and describes certain periods and the work that he's doing at that time, it's clear that at least, at the very least, subconsciously, what was going on in his own personal life at the time always kind of bled into his work, which I think made his work a little more real, a little more visceral, and you felt it as a reader a lot more. So I find it interesting that he always wanted to tell stories, and although he's an exquisite illustrator and just an incredible pencil artist, you know, he can ink, he can paint, he's first and foremost a storyteller, right? And at different times he's challenged himself in different ways, like choosing to step back from comics and write a prose novel. And he's done that several times. So I found the art book to be absolutely fascinating. It's well over 300 pages, and I read it all in one sitting. Now, obviously, when you're talking about an art book, it's not like it's a 300-page novel, right? I mean, it's a lot of the pages don't have any words on them at all, other than credits on, you know, for whatever particular art is on that page or on the previous page. So it probably took me 4 hours to read the whole thing, but I was pretty riveted the whole time, and I have nothing but respect for Jim Starlin, and you know, I had tremendous respect for him as a creator before I read this. That hasn't changed having read this. I do feel like I do have a little bit of a better understanding of who he is as a person. He's somebody that I would love to sit down and interview and chat with. And even if it was completely off the record, I've always been a huge fan of his work. I did discover something in the book which pleased me, and that's his work for Bravura, which was a Malibu creator-owned imprint back in, I think it was in the mid-90s. Mid to late 90s. But Breed was always I was always a huge fan of that series, probably my favorite work that Starlin's ever done. And in the book, I find out that it's his favorite of his work that he's ever done, the most personal, the work that he put the most of himself in. So I was pleased to find that out in reading this book. But as I said, I would love to sit down and talk with him and chat with him and find out, because obviously this book came out before Infinity Wars, but Thanos was already a thing, right? Like, he was already going to be in the movie. And you know, Jim knew that at the time of writing this, I'm sure, but I don't know if anybody had any idea just how big that movie was going to be. And I remember I saw Jim at, the Amazing Las Vegas Comic Con back in June, and he had a giant line the entire time. I tried to set up an interview with him, but it just didn't work out, and I didn't get a chance to talk to him at any point because the line was always huge, and I just didn't have time to stand in it because I had other commitments. So I'm definitely hoping to run into him at a show in the future, and you know, based on the popularity of Thanos and the Infinity Stones, I guess, as they're called in the movies, which, you know, to me, they'll always be Infinity Gems. But based on the popularity of these ideas and these stories that Jim's created, I don't know if you can ever really put that genie back in the bottle. I don't think you can. It may be one of those situations where he's always a rock star now. Whenever he goes to a show, he doesn't do a lot of them, right? I think you can kind of compare it to Rob Liefeld. You know, now that Deadpool has become so mainstream, anytime he goes to a show now, his line is huge, right? Like, I remember just a few years ago before Deadpool came out, Rob just had a table in Artist Alley, and not to say there weren't people coming up to him at various times. He would have a line, people waiting to talk to him or get signatures or whatever. But there were also times where I walked by his table where he was just sitting there working on a commission, right? And there was nobody around. That doesn't happen with Rob Liefeld now. He's always got a line. around the booth, so to speak. And in fact, Rob was at that same convention that Jim Starlin was at. I did get a chance to chat with him briefly. But yeah, he had a giant line. And in fact, when I did talk to him, as you may know, if you listened to the interview, it was between him signing things for other people. So I only got to ask just a few quick questions. So that may be the trajectory that Jim Starlin has, especially because, as I said, he doesn't do a whole lot of shows, and he'll be the first to tell you that it's kind of not his thing. He's not a big con goer. He's not one to kind of play the political game of going to shows and doing the song and dance with, editors and networking and all that. It's just not who he is, right? And that's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But in this day and age of social media and everything, it is more the exception than the norm. And that's also part of the reason that I didn't get a chance to interview him. He's not one to really sit down for interviews, right? He just doesn't see the point. He's always done things his own way, so to speak. He's always been very independent and very principled, and he's a very honest person, straight shooter, and he just doesn't play the game, right? That's just not who he is. And again, tremendous respect for him in that sense. And I give him my highest possible recommendation to this book. It was so refreshing to kind of get the story from Jim himself. And again, it's not a comprehensive story. It's not meant to be. But it does give you kind of snapshots and a view into Jim Starlin's world at particular moments in his career. And I think if you're a Starlin fan, this is an absolute must-have. And then when you put on top of that, besides the incredible story or history of Jim or views into his life and career at particular times, the art in this book, I mean, it's Jim Starlin art. I don't know what more you want than that. But the thing that's great about it is it's not just all super polished Jim Starlin art from like his most recent Thanos run or from the Infinity Gauntlet. Perez and Lim did most of that, but his Captain Marvel series, or Adam Warlock, it's all of that. It's all of that and more, because there's art in here from when he first started out doing fanzines. There's art in here from painted paperback covers that he did. He's done covers over the years for Justice League and Batman and things like Jungle Action and Amazing Adventure, Master of Kung Fu. I mean, there's just, he was breaking into the industry at a time where it was like, if there was work to be done, it was, and you happen to be in the office, it got handed to you, right? So he's done such a wide, breadth of work from, working on Iron Man, Superman, Batman, obviously Captain Marvel, the Cosmic Odyssey series over at DC, where he got his hands on Darkseid, and of course the Rand Thanagar War. I mean, the man has done it all in his career. He's done it his own way, in his own style, and again, to hear it in his own words, and to be able to look at this art, which is, it's just spectacular art. And for me, other than Breed, Dreadstar is really it for me as far as Starlin's work. And I just count myself lucky to have been able to experience the work of Jim Starlin, and the fact that he's still alive. And, I have met him before briefly, because to me, he's up there with legends like, Jack Kirby and Gil Kane and Kurt Swan, these are all legends who clearly put their mark on comics, but that I never got a chance to meet. And I think when all is said and done, when people look back on the history of Jim Starlin, he's going to be revered in the same way that a lot of those giants of the industry are revered, because I think that his mark on the industry is indelible. And I think that especially when you see so many of his ideas being brought over into mainstream pop culture in these movies and TV shows, again, the guy is just a living master. And do yourself a favor, go pick up this book. It's beautiful to look at. It's a great package from Aftershock. And I think if you're a Jim Starlin fan, you probably already have it. If you're a Jim Starlin fan and you don't have it, then I'm revoking your Jim Starlin fandomness, and you don't get it back until you go and pick up this book. Like, that's how important. It's an absolute must-have for any Jim Starlin fan out there. So, all right, everybody, thanks for joining me as always. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, be sure and check out all the other coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to check us out on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.